Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia, and this is another in this series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Augustine of Hippo's Harmony of the Evangelists. And in this episode, we're going to be looking at Book 1, chapters 19 through 21. We begin in chapter 19, which is titled, The Proof That This God Is the True God. But that must have been a vain necessity and a ridiculous timidity. We ask now what opinion regarding this God is formed by those men whose pleasure it is that all gods ought to be worshipped. For if he ought not to be worshipped, how are all worshipped when he is not worshipped? And if he ought to be worshipped, it cannot be that all others are to be worshipped along with him. For unless he is worshipped alone, he is really not worshipped at all. Or may it perhaps be the case that they will allege him to be no god at all, while they call those gods who, as we believe, have no power to do anything except so far as permission is given them by his judgment, have not merely no power to do good to anyone, but no power even to do harm to any except to those who are judged by him who possesses all power to merit so to be harmed. But, as they themselves are compelled to admit, those deities have shown less power than he has done. For if those are held to be gods whose prophets, when consulted by men, have returned responses which, that I may not call them false, were at least most convenient for their private interests, how is not he to be regarded as God, whose prophets have not only given the congruous answer on subjects regarding which they have consulted at the special time, but who also, in the case of subjects respecting which they were not consulted, and which related to the universal race of man and all nations, have announced prophetically so long time before the events those very things of which we now read, and which indeed we now behold. If they gave the name of God to that being under whose inspiration the Sibyl sung of the fates of the Romans, how is it not he to be called God, who, in accordance with the announcement aforetime given, has shown us how the Romans and all nations are coming to believe in himself through the gospel of Jesus Christ as the one God, and to demolish all the images of their fathers? Finally, if they designate those as gods, who have never dared through their prophets to say anything against this God, how is it not he to be designated God, who not only commanded by the mouth of his prophets the destruction of their images, but who also predicted that among all the Gentiles they would be destroyed by those who should be enjoined to abandon their idols and to worship him alone, and who, on receiving these injunctions, should be his servants? Chapter 20. Of the fact that nothing is discovered to have been predicted by the prophets of the pagans in opposition to the God of the Hebrews. Or let them aver, if they are able, that some Sibyl of theirs, or any one whatever among their own prophets, announced long ago that it would come to pass that the God of the Hebrews, the God of Israel, would be worshipped by all nations, declaring at the same time that the worshippers of other gods before that time had rightly rejected him, and again that the compositions of his prophets would be in such exalted authority that in obedience to them the Roman government itself would command the destruction of images, the said seers of the same time giving warnings against acting upon such ordinances. Let them, I say, read out any utterances like these, if they can, from any of the books of their prophets. For I stop not to state that those things which we can read in their books repeat a testimony on behalf of our religion, that is, the Christian religion, which they might have heard from the holy angels and from our prophets themselves, just as the very devils were compelled to confess Christ when he was present in the flesh. But I pass by these matters, regarding which, when we bring them forward, their contention is that they were invented by our party. Most certainly, however, they may themselves be pressed to adduce anything which has been prophesied by the seers of their own gods against the God of the Hebrews. As on our side, we can point to declarations so remarkable at once for number and for weight recorded in the books of our prophets against their gods in which also we can both note the command and recite the prediction and demonstrate the event. And over the realization of these things, that comparatively small number of heathens who have remained such are more inclined to grieve than they are ready to acknowledge that God who has had the power to foretell these things as events destined to be made good. Whereas in their dealings with their own false gods, who are genuine demons, they prize nothing else so highly as to be informed by their responses of something which is to take place with them. Chapter 21, titled, An Argument for the Exclusive Worship of This God, who, while he prohibits other deities from being worshipped, is not himself interdicted by other divinities from being worshipped. Seeing then that these things are so, why do not these unhappy men rather apprehend the fact that this God is the true God, whom they perceive to be placed in a position so thoroughly separated from the company of their own deities, that although they are compelled to acknowledge him to be God, those very persons who profess that all gods ought to be worshipped are nevertheless not permitted to worship him along with the rest? Now, since these deities and this God cannot be worshipped together, why is not he selected who forbids those others to be worshipped? And why are not those deities abandoned who did not interdict him from being worshipped? Or if they do indeed forbid his worship, let the interdict be read. For what has greater claims to be recited to their people and their temples, in which the sound of no such thing has ever been heard? And, in good sooth, the prohibition directed by so many against one ought to be more notable and more potent than the prohibition launched by one against so many. For if the worship of this God is impious, then those gods are profitless who do not interdict men from that impiety. But if the worship of this God is pious, then, as in that worship, the commandment is given that these others are not to be worshipped. Their worship is impious. If again, those deities forbid his worship, but only so differently that they rather fear to be heard than dare to prohibit, who is so unwise as not to draw his own inference from the fact, who fails to perceive that this God ought to be chosen, who in so public a manner prohibits their worship, who commanded that their images should be destroyed, who foretold that demolition, who himself effected it, in preference to those deities of whom we know not that they ordained abstinence from his worship, of whom we do not read that they foretold such an event, and in whom we do not see power sufficient to have brought it about. I put the question, let them give the answer. Who is this God who thus harasses all the gods of the Gentiles, who thus betrays all their sacred rites, who thus renders them extinct? Here ends book 1 and chapters 19 through 21. And let's go back and give some notes and commentary on each of these three chapters. We'll start off with Book 1, Chapter 19, titled The Proof That God is the True God. Augustine continues to ask why the pagan Romans refused to offer worship to the biblical God, the God of the Hebrews, or the God of Israel, in the manner in which he desires to be worshipped. He adds, quote, "For unless he is worshipped alone, he is really not worshipped at all," end quote. Augustine suggests that even the pagans will admit that their deities have shown less power than the one true God. Now, Book 1, Chapter 20, titled, Of the Fact That Nothing is Discovered to Have Been Predicted by the Prophets of the Pagans in Opposition to the God of the Hebrews. Augustine here declares that the prophets of the pagan gods, like those of Sibyl, never predicted that the God of the Hebrews would be worshipped by all men, or by men from all nations. He makes reference to the devils confessing Christ during Christ's performance of exorcisms, but notes, quote, "their contention is that they were invented by our party," end quote. In contrast to the pagan prophets, Augustine calls attention to the Old Testament prophets who accurately predicted the coming of Christ. In Book 1, Chapter 21, it's titled, An Argument for the Exclusive Worship of This God, who, while he prohibits other deities from being worshipped, is not himself interdicted by other divinities from being worshipped. Augustine poses a logical challenge to his pagan opponents based on two contradictory opinions. First, their religion claims that all the gods are to be worshipped. Augustine is asking, why then do they not worship the God of the Hebrews? Secondly, however, the God of the Hebrews demands exclusive allegiance. If they worship him aright, why then do they not put away the other gods? Augustine closes with a question. Who is this God who thus harasses all the gods of the Gentiles, who thus betrays all their sacred rites, who thus renders them extinct? In conclusion, Augustine continues to press in these chapters the superiority of the God of the Bible to the pagan pantheon of the gods. He especially makes the point that whereas the pagan gods did not demand exclusive allegiance, the God of the Hebrews was intolerant and demanded the exclusive allegiance of his worshipers. He also contrasts the pagan prophets to the biblical prophets. And he continues, although this is a work that is on the harmony of the evangelists, in this book one, to give a great deal of attention to sort of the religious conflict between Christianity and its belief in one God who demands exclusive allegiance and who is intolerant, in contrast to the many gods of the pre-Christian Greek and Roman religions, and how these gods were supposedly tolerant of the worship of other deities. And so there's a battle of religions that is evident, as he is sort of giving this as a preface for his discussion of the harmony of the Gospels. Well, this is going to bring this episode to a conclusion. I hope this has been helpful and edifying to those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Till then, take care and God bless.